We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Today I'm talking with Dan the Beast Severn. He's a UFC Hall of Famer, a legend in combat sports with more than 4 decades of wrestling and fighting experience.
I have a philosophical question first.
Philosophical? We're going to go with that deep?
Yeah, we're going to go deep.
Okay, all right.
Why did you fight? Why do you fight?
I look this way. Lex, I have never been in a fight in my entire life. I've been in competition. Everything I've done has been competition. Never a fight.
You've never been in a fight? You know, like a street fight? You've never been in a fight?
No. I mean, okay. Lex, in today's world,
yes.
How strong do you have to be to pull the trigger? How strong do you have to be to stick someone with a knife? Yeah. Now, reality is, you hear about these child murders because they found a parent's weapon and they're playing cops and robbers or cowboys and Indians. All of a sudden, boom, someone gets killed.
Yes.
Okay, a child can pull a trigger. My whole point behind this is you don't know what I have in my pockets, and I don't know what you have in your pockets. So I'm a big believer, and I always have been, in the golden rule of life. Simply treat other people the way you want to be treated. No better, no worse. Now, that is a lost commodity nowadays.
Yes.
There was a great movie. I think it was called The Dumbing Down of the United States.
Or
The Dumbing Down of the World. No, it was a comedy. But the comedy, you know, even in comedy, points of truth are brought about. It just people can swallow it a little bit easier because it's in comedy.
The kind of toughness required to step into the ring, wrestling, amateur wrestling even, to fighting is incredible. So what was the fuel in that fire? What was the reason you did it? Competed for so many years.
Well, it's a combination of things. Starting off, it was just to be just trying different sports. And then finding something that you could take to and that you were having success in. Like any other child, I was simply just trying different sports in the beginning, playing the basketball, playing the baseball, football, things of nature. I mean, the opportunities that children have today, when you look at professional tennis, professional golf, they're starting at 3 years of age. In the sport of wrestling, you can compete. You can compete at age 4.
Yes.
I've had parents bring me their 3-year-old and like, mold him or her now. Now, they're not even out of diapers.
Yeah. You think that's a bad thing?
Yes, I do. Competition, they should not be involved in competition. They don't even understand how to play nice. They don't understand the word no.
They haven't developed that humanity yet.
Exactly. They don't understand competition. Yeah. It's adults.
Yes.
Living vicariously through their child. And there's half the time, especially being at amateur wrestling events, I'll see that father that is chewing their 4 or 5-year-old son or daughter out for things they did wrong out on the mat. And half the time, I like to go up there and grab that dear old dad by the scruff of the neck and just say, what didn't you accomplish in your low own life that you expect your child to do for you?
Yeah.
Sad, but that's what it is. I don't think that children should be involved in competition.
Yes.
Should they be involved in athletics? Yes. For the development of gross motor skills, hand-eye coordination, because the society or the generation that we are raising today is sad at best. Mm-hmm. When the statistical facts come out that I am going to outlive my own kids because of the childhood obesity, the childhood diabetes, and the list goes on and on. That's sad because they don't know how to do things physically, but you give them a piece of electronics, you know. And again, I'm going to pull out the old, you know, mine is obsolete, but this little gadget right there. You walk into a mall and you just do a quick 360, find the teenager or find the person that doesn't have one, welded into their hand. Yeah, I have certain things about even my own household. You come to my dinner table, you lose that cell phone. We're going to engage in good old-fashioned conversation one-on-one. We're not going to be doing this.
Yeah. So technology has a negative overall effect, you think?
No. It was meant to give people more free time. It's what the whole purpose behind this. It was to help you to be more productive in the least amount of time. But yes. That is not what has came about of this equation.
Yes, but what we do with that free time is not the right
exactly.
Things.
I mean, again, I have friends that they don't even engage their kids. Yeah. They go and they put their 8 or 10 hours in at work. They come home. They eat food, usually in front of the boob tube, and they will be anesthetized for the rest of the evening in front of that boob tube, and they think they're engaging their family because I sit here staring at this box, and you're sitting there staring at this box, yet we're not speaking to each other. We're not engaging type of thing. So to me, that's not engaging.
And once again, the humanity is not being developed.
Right. I don't like the television at all. I watch very little of that. Anyone knows me, they aren't going to see me. I will sit down and watch a token movie.
Yeah.
I will watch a token special.
Yeah.
And again, I do enjoy comedy because I do too many serious things. So I do like my occasional chuckle me yuck yuck.
Yeah,
so,
you got a little comedy in you. So do you get out in nature? What's the
no,
when you
no,
get away?
It is. I grew up on a farm.
Farm.
So going out, growing up on a farm, I mean, I had that, you know, that childhood fantasy growing up on a 120 acre farm. So you had crops and animals. You named the animal, we raised it, but you didn't get too close to it because sooner or later it was going to end up on your table.
Yeah.
And that was kind of tough there when you had especially when we had the family cow, Peggy, who was with us for about 8 years, and then Peggy got that stage of life where she wasn't all that productive in the milk.
Yes,
and
all of a sudden,
she was turned into hamburger.
Yeah.
And here we're all kind of boo-hooing about poor old Peggy, and my dad said, Peggy never tasted so good.
He loved Peggy even through that, yeah. So how did you get into wrestling?
Oh, so we have to ask this question. Probably fluke circumstances. I was involved in basketball at the time. You know, and again, I was watching more television at that point in time and seeing, I kept thinking, well, I'm going to be this incredible basketball player. But I basically rode the pine. I wasn't capable of actually dribbling a basketball, looking away, and still actually having that basketball underneath my hand.
Yeah.
So the coach felt that the safest place was for me was to sit on the bench.
Yes.
All right. So make a long story short, a few of my friends, classmates that were on the wrestling team, a big flu epidemic hits.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of students are not even at school. Mm-hmm. Several of the fellow teammates were not on the team. And like, Dan, can you help us out? We're going to have to forfeit these weight classes. Can you fill in a weight class? I'm thinking, here, big old strapping, you know, farm kid. Sure, I can go out there and show them a thing.
You knew nothing about wrestling?
Knew nothing about wrestling.
That theme continues throughout your life. You step into these challenges.
Well, again, how I started off. Well, I mean, but okay, Lex, it didn't turn out well for me that night because I had two matches and I lost both.
Was
matches.
There any fear there? Were you scared? Stepping up against another?
It was so long ago now. I mean, I could probably answer that question by going back to old journals, and that's the cool part is I've been keeping journals since my junior high years.
Wow.
I've been writing a book for well over a decade. The problem is I have too much content. I have well over 1,000 pages. But on one page alone, there might be one segment that simply says, Leipzig, East Germany, Russian vodka, you know, I could say lots of vodka, Russian negotiation. Those three or four lines is probably a 15-20-page story because there used to be an East Germany.
Yes,
I was there four different times to see the Iron Curtain and the Berlin Wall. Yes. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So the education that I've received, both as a student of Arizona State University, but the better education is simply by traveling the entire United States and being to every country that ever had a wrestling program and some that do not exist anymore.
What was your style of wrestling? Hard-nosed, technical?
Combination of
everything.
Yes, because there are times that you are going to step into on a mat or in a cage or in a ring with someone that you know who is better than what you are. Mm-hmm. And that's where you have to rise to the occasion and you will have to impose your will upon them.
Yes.
Now, I only believe in, I always hear all these coaches, you got to give me 110%, you got to give me 150%. That is bullshit. Mm-hmm. There is only 100% and there's 101%. Any of these other things, I would like to simply just smack that coach because of sheer stupidity and promoting people into other types of realms of fascination.
Yes.
There's only 100%, and that's when you gave your maximum effort, and there's 101 when you went beyond your capabilities.
Yes, that's when you step beyond your limits.
Yes.
Can you talk about your growth? I mean, in high school, you were a two-time national champion. Is that true?
Two-time state champion, couple-time national champion, was a freestyle national champion, Greco-Roman national champion, most pins award, outstanding wrestler. And the reality is, I broke and held 8 national records simultaneously, which is a national record in itself. No other human being has come close to holding 8 national records. So what does that say about an old farm kid from a little Class C school known as Montrose Hill McCloy?
Wow. But whenever somebody accomplishes something that great, like Dan Gable, I have to ask about your losses.
Sure. Those are burned at the memory here.
So, did you lose much, and how did you deal with loss?
Oh, sure. My, as I said, just starting out in the sport of wrestling, in my junior high, in the first experience, first two matches, boom, lost both of them because I had no technique. I'd never gone to a single practice and stuff like that. And then as I basically went back and finished out my illustrious basketball career, then I came back, and then I signed up for wrestling versus basketball because I was going to go out and do something instead of riding the pine.
Yes.
And that's where, again, that's a whole different issue I have with people. I don't even like to use the word coach. Adults that wield the title of coach and all they're doing is playing God over children. And I see that so much more today that you could be the coach's son. You suck. Mm-hmm. And yet, who gets to play? You get to play because you're the coach's son. And I like an individual sport like wrestling because if you're the coach's son and I grab you and I throw you down on the ground and I pin you, guess who gets to step into the lineup? Exactly.
That's the beauty of wrestling.
But it's on team sports. Oh, it's so political and I can't stand it.
Who was the toughest guy you've ever faced in amateur wrestling?
I'll tell you right now, his name was Larry Habilov, 4-time world champion.
Habilov. He wasn't Russian?
It wasn't, I think he only won one or two at that point in time. And I knew I was walking into a match that he's better than me. And I only have one thing that I can do to him is that I have to wear him out. Because the moment that I can wear him out, I will be able to start scoring points. So literally in the match, I knew that I was going to be losing. For how long in this match, I did not know how I was going to be losing. But he had me probably, 5, 6, 7, 8 points to nothing.
Yes.
By the time fatigue, each time we went out of bounds, I'm the guy that's hustling back to the center. Referees, and again, that's kind of that psychological aspect because the referee sees, ooh, world champion's kind of moving a little slow back right there. I'm getting on him. And now I'm the first guy to advance across this match, and I score the first point. And it's firing the fuel into me. Then I score the second point, and then we're getting closer and closer. And the fact that I tie him, and then I'm ahead of him. And just not only did I beat him once, I beat him a couple times, and the toughest one is to beat him in his own home country, in his hometown, in front of his people, because you've heard that expression of being homered.
Mm.
You think I was being screwed over by points stuff like this, being in Russia,
being in
his hometown? I said that I didn't just beat him. I beat him and 3 referees.
Exactly.
Because you have your main referee that's on the mat, and you have 2 side judges, and half the time
and the crowd.
Things are taking place. They don't even want to look because they don't want to acknowledge and have to score me points. So that's what I said. I beat him. I imposed my will upon him, and I beat him because technically, could I beat him? Nope. I imposed my will.
Yeah.
I rose to the occasion. I gave 101%.
You beat a man you couldn't beat.
Exactly.
Yeah. You entered, I mean, the story is well known, but I have to ask, you entered the world of MMA in 94 at UFC 4. Can you tell the story of how you went from being a wrestler to being a fighter?
What's the story that's out there right now?
The story is you had no idea what this thing is. You had very little time to prepare. You were basically thrown into the sharks, the wolves.
Well, I'll say bingo, 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 and then not quite so bingo. But the reality is, pay-per-views were a brand new commodity. Yeah. I had bought a home in Coldwater, Michigan, as of 1992. Mm-hmm. I first started pursuing my profession of professional wrestling. Not mm-hmm. wrestling, wrestling. Where men in tights yes. settled their differences in the squared circle. Yes. WWE, yes. TNA, the old WCW, blah, blah, blah.
Wrestling, yeah.
Yep. And that was my first profession. And then, lo and behold, then comes this very controversial product called No Holds Barred Fighting, which a lot of the viewers here, they don't even know what that term means. They're mm-hmm. very well versed in mixed martial arts. Mixed martial arts has approximately 37 rules.
Yes.
Part of those 37 rules, there are weight classes. There are time periods. Athletes wear gloves, and they fight one opponent in a given evening. Yeah. Back in the no holds barred era, there were two rules. Those being, do not bite your opponent.
Right.
Then rule number two is, do not stick fingers in their eye sockets.
In their eye
no
sides.
Eye gouge.
Beautiful. Simple.
End of the rules. Anything that your imagination can come up with, you are good to go. And people are like, no, you couldn't do. Did you bite it? Or did you stick it in someone's eye?
Yeah.
You are good to go.
Yeah.
No weight classes.
What is that experience?
No time periods.
No time.
Yeah. 8-man tournament. You had to face and defeat 3 men in a 2-hour pay-per-view. And sitting before you is the only Triple Crown champion in the UFC's no holds barred era. And now, yes. since it is against the law, I'm it.
The only
do
one
you
ever.
Do you see marks on me?
No. Still, yeah.
Okay. Yes. What do my ears look like?
Perfect. No cauliflower.
Yeah. I wear headgear. It's for about $20-$25, it's a phenomenal investment. Okay. And my nose still sits in the center of my face. And my teeth, although a little crooked, they've always been crooked. So it's kind of like, it's not like
nothing changed.
Yeah, exactly.
But what is that experience like? I mean, the uncertainty of it. Though everything is allowed. Just stepping in. I mean, the possibility of serious injury is very real.
Oh, right? Sure. I mean, I signed a piece of paper. And I kept a few of these contracts because I would think that some people would question what I said.
Yes.
But in black and white, it says at the bottom of this contract, in the event of your accidental death, let's see, as long as I don't bite someone or stick a finger in their eye socket, I think there's a whole lot of other ways I can take your life without ever violating those two rules. So yes. I never told a single family member when I went to do my matches, because if mom and dad got a little bit nervous when Danny Boy had to go wrestle,
yeah.
Do you think, how nervous do you think they get when they knew I was going to go climb into a cage?
They'd be terrified. Were you terrified?
No.
No fear.
I have been, okay, at the time I had been involved, I was starting my third occupation.
Mm-hmm.
Amateur wrestler, professional wrestler, cage fighter.
Yeah.
I can't say mixed martial arts because it was a no-holds-barred era. It was a mixed martial arts era. I was there during the transition, state by state, as rules are being taken place.
Yeah.
I'm in a match with you, and I have to stop for a moment, look up at the referee and say, hey, am
I allowed
to? And here I'm tipping to my hat to my opponent, but it's like, did I ever have any rule violations? Yeah. Nope.
No.
I'm a competitor. As I said, a fighter? No. Never been a fight. Competitor? Yes, my entire life.
Was there, one of the big ones is unlimited time.
Sure.
Was there a fear of that? The cardio involved? I mean, the open-endedness of unlimited time.
I'll put it like this, Lex. At the Ultimate, a lot of people don't even know what that means, but the Ultimate Fighting Championship had one event. It was titled the Ultimate, mm-hmm. where they brought back, and this again was during the no-holds-barred era. And they brought back various champions and or runner-ups. They put them in an 8-man tournament. It was a 2-hour pay-per-view. I was inside between the 3 opponents that I had. I was inside the octagon cage just over 1 hour. And this was Denver, Colorado, mile-high elevation. So once again, there are times when tell a story here. This might sum it up. I'm over in England. I'm going up against this guy. He's known as the Colossus. He has never gone over 1 minute with anybody.
Yeah.
So I'm out there, and I travel typically after I did my few different stints with the UFC. Yeah. Pretty much, I travel by myself. And you're like, well, who's your corner person going to be? I'll be like, I look around and go, hey, what are you doing for the next 15 minutes? Yeah. Can you hold a water bottle and maybe tell me how much time and have a towel?
Yeah.
And like, well, that's so cool to be Dan Severn's corner man. I just want to know how much time is left, because as time is trickling down, if I feel like I'm losing a round, I may have to kick it up a little bit more to try to steal the round. I mean, I just like being known what's happening. Now, as I'm facing the Colossus, as I said before, he has never gone over 1 minute. Well, we finished the first round. I go back to my corner. He goes back to his corner. He's got like an Indianapolis 500 pit crew on him. He's got one guy rubbing out one leg, one guy rubbing out the other leg. This guy's rubbing this arm. This guy's rubbing the other arm. Coach is right in there barking orders, stuff like this. I got some skinny little kid who's holding a stool and a towel over his shoulder and a water bottle, and he's looking at me like, Mr. Severn, would you care to sit down or drink the water? And I'm like going, I'm sucking. And my kid, I am sucking air from every orifice of my body. If I sit down on that bench, you do not have the strength to pry that stool off of my ass. He starts laughing. He just can't believe I have a sense of humor about the whole type of thing right there. And the three's like, yeah, give me the water bottle, wipe the towel. I go, I said, that round didn't go all that well for me. Any recommendations? And he's like going, I go, well, if you don't have any recommendations, you better have a joke for me for round two. And then he just leaves. He's like, he just couldn't believe I had this kind of where for all for I was at. But then also, John McCarthy was asked once to write a book called Inside the Octagon. And he was telling me about this. And again, this was a few years back. I had no idea if it ever even took place.
Yeah.
And he's telling me about it. I go, well, what's the premise of it there, John? He goes, well, his interaction with athletes, both inside and outside the octagon. I go, sounds like it's right up your alley. Well, he goes, Severn says, I'm going to write an entire chapter about you alone. I go, well, why is that, John? He says, out of all the fighters, he says, you're the only guy that has come up with one-liners before your match, after your match, and sometimes in the middle of your match.
During.
He says, you're just farting around competing against guys that are trying to take your head off or end your life.
Yeah.
I go, John, I can live with my conscience.
Where did that come from?
Well, you asked me before, did I have fear?
Yes.
No.
Never
now,
fear.
The reason I didn't have fear is, as I said, I've been involved in three occupations.
Yes.
Amateur wrestler, professional wrestler, cage fighter.
Cage fighter.
I have been hurt far worse in my professional wrestling career than I have been in all of my cage fights. How is that possible when one is real and one is fantasy? I'll let you be the guess of which one I'm referring to, because I don't wish to burst any of your viewers
mystery,
right there and having them, you know, go home and cry in their John Cena pillow or their Hulk Hogan doll or something like that.
Yes, yes, yes.
But, you know, again, the comparisons between the two, there is a physical preparation and there's a mental mindset to become the various types of characters. Now, in the real reality, out of all three different professions, I've been hurt far worse in my amateur wrestling career than all of them. But that's just because of sheer number of matches. I've been hurt far worse abroad, not inside the United States, because competition inside the United States is nice. It's civilized.
Yes.
There are rules, sportsmanlike conduct. But you would be surprised what you can do when you have a foreign opponent on foreign soil and you have a foreign referee and it's your country's flag. I fought harder, not for money, not for a belt. I fought harder to step on the top of a podium, to have my country's flag raised, and the playing of the national anthem. That gives me goosebumps right now, even to think of that, because I know what that feeling is like. So many other people don't know what that feels like, and so many other people just, they don't take national pride the way I take national pride.
Yes. So not the money, not the fame.
Money,
it's just,
the fame,
just
none of that was, it was never my concern. Like I said before, when I jumped in my first UFC, My guarantee was $1,000.
Yeah.
Now, to sign a contract that simply says, in the event of your accidental death, I'd like to know that my carcass was worth more than $1,000. At least it was to me.
Can you take me through UFC 4? Royce Gracie said that you're the toughest man he's ever gone against.
Yes.
Can you talk about that match?
He said it to me when the match was done, and we stood up. Yeah, we embraced each other as gentlemen, competitors, and stuff like this. And he said that you're the toughest guy that he had ever faced. And I thanked him. But in my mind, I'm thinking, you haven't seen anything yet of what I'm capable of doing.
Yeah.
The hard part of being involved in that match is you realize I was the last bit of filling.
Yeah.
When you think about Ultimate Fighting Championships today, you know about your match how many months in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing training camps for 4 or 6 months. When I was finally told that I was in, I've always been a busy person, and I had obligations.
Mm-hmm.
I allowed myself just enough time to train for 5 days, an hour and a half a day, and then I entered into the world of no holds barred fighting. Now you gotta realize, today you could throw a rock in almost any direction and you'll find a cage.
Yeah.
Not back. Not there. At that time period, cages, there was only, I think, only one real cage, and that was for the company, Ultimate Fighting Championship. And I went down to Lima, Ohio with Al Snow, Body Slammers Gym, and a professional wrestling ring was the closest thing that I could find to a cage with Al Snow and a couple of other professional wrestling proteges, and they had one old pair of boxing gloves. Okay. And they simply just rotated the boxing gloves. They would simply rotate them from person to person. They were trying to punch, kick, and do whatever types of submissions and things. Again, they were just pulling things out of their rectum to do things.
That was the training regimen right
and
there.
I just used my amateur wrestling skills to either avoid, close distance,
or clinch,
take down, and simply slap on amateur wrestling moves. Now, again, I teach amateur wrestling. I've been teaching amateur wrestling since 1971. Won my first national title in 72. And you were born when?
83.
Again, my point is that I've been competing and winning titles longer than most of my opponents have been alive.
Then let me jump to that. You've had at least 127 professional MMA fights, but probably much more.
Again, if that's what the internet says, is that what you're saying?
The internet says, yeah.
When did Full Contact Fighter, Sure Dog, when did all these websites exist? 2, 3, 4 years after the fact, when no holds barred fighting broke bread in the United States, they were popping up all over the place.
Yes.
There's probably, I would say, conservatively, maybe another 15 to 25 matches. Again, I'm a conservative type of person.
Yes.
It could be, easily could be more than what I'm saying right now. That could be added in there. There was a point in time when I was given a pager. Now, again, I may have to explain to some of your
what a pager
viewers,
is.
What a pager. It was prior to the cell phone, you know, that a little buzzer would go off at a phone number, and you actually had to go to a pay phone and call.
What's a pay
number.
Phone?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was like, ooh. And the pager would go off, and I simply knew that the deal was I had to be ready to go. When the pager went off, I'd make a phone call. I would go to an airport, and there would be a ticket waiting for me. I'd fly to a destination. I'd be picked up, taken to another designation, and there would be a tent set up in a recluse type of area. And then the festivities would take place, you know, wining and dining.
Yeah.
And then there would be these cage matches that would be taking place. And then, you know, the tent and all that gone bye-bye by the following morning because it was not supposed to take place. Now, one event that I did turn down, I was offered to a very lucrative deal to go to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted to be, you realize, the Ultimate Fighting Championship had two rules. This organization wanted to be even more brutal yet. They wanted no rules.
Zero rules. Wow.
They wanted to hold the event in a cockfighting pit.
Uh-huh.
Again, no rules, even to the point that you could wear Levi jeans and cowboy boots. They were going to start with roosters, progress to dogs. And then go to main event human beings. All in the
human
same pit.
Human cockfighting.
Yeah. So it's kind of like.
You turned that one down.
I did because I kept thinking, even if I might win.
Yeah.
Will I get out of that
arena?
Because, you know, kind of money they're talking is kind of going, ooh, that's kind of money that someone might want to.
So the reason you didn't do it isn't even because you were scared of the no rules. It was the
it was just
smart to
it was a business decision.
It's a business
at that point.
Decision.
That's probably the more eloquent way of putting it. It was a business decision.
All right. So with 127 plus 150, I don't know how many, a lot. You stayed, as you said, unmarked for the most part.
I've kept the money maker.
The money maker.
All right, okay.
So
I guess some of the other younger people, they understand that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Using the lingo.
The bling bling or whatever out there, yeah.
So what's your secret?
Well, my comedic answer is simply that I believe in the theory of duck.
Duck?
Yeah, I hear guys all the time that, they say, well Dan or Mr. Severn, I like to stand there and trade. Really? Trading means I'm going to give you some, and then I'm going to take some.
Yeah.
I don't believe in trading. I believe in guerrilla warfare. Get in, get out. It's called piecework. You're not being paid by the hour to get out there. You just get in, get your work done, and get back out. But to elaborate on that a little bit more, what were the skills I brought to the table, I think, is also, if you were a boxer, kickboxer, yeah, Muay Thai, granted, your arsenal is your striking. Even simply just to train those three that I just talked about right now, the punishment that you take in the process, you don't see a real longevity,
yes,
in boxers, kickboxers, and Muay Thai. You just get the constant banging and punishment to the body. I was a wrestler. Mm-hmm. And I never forgot I was a wrestler. Again, after my illustrious 5 days, hour and a half a day, going in my training camp for UFC number 4, I used my wrestling background, knowing that I have to be within arm's reach of you for you to strike me. I'll either step back a little bit out of your range, or I close that distance before you get any real mustard on any of these shots.
The equation is simple, yeah.
Exactly. And that equation served me very well, and actually still continues to serve many of the competitors today. Out of range, close the range.
Yes.
I teach that all the time about doing these kind of things. You're not going to be taking a wrestler down. I mean, you know, the blunt aspect is, who are the kings of the takedowns? The wrestlers are kings of the takedowns. I mean, it's any jiu-jitsu practitioner worth his weight in salt works with the wrestler on takedowns. Now, the flaw of wrestling is the fact that wrestling does not teach you submission techniques. But at the same token, yes, there are certain principles and elements of it, because in wrestling, I'm using principles of leverage,
yes,
to turn you on your back and to pin you.
Yes.
Okay, what's another word for leverage? Pain. I have to induce you into pain,
yes,
to make you do things for me. And that's why I always say that if they're bottling up, put them into a little bit of pain. Oh, they'll open on up. Oh, they'll move to alleviate pain. I didn't make up my ring name, The Beast. It was bestowed upon me by a legendary football player by the name of Jim Brown. He was one of the play-by-play commentators for the early Ultimate Fighting Championships. They wanted a tough, rugged guy. Well, they got him. Got one. Hall of Famer, Jim Brown himself. So, you know, as he got to know me, don't have them on my head right now. I wear glasses. And he says, but I wear them for distance. He says, you kind of remind me of Clark Kent, Superman. You're kind of soft-spoken. Because I don't say unless someone's asking me direct questions.
Yes.
Otherwise, I sit back. I just kind of keep my own two cents to myself.
Yes.
But he says, you remind me of a Clark Kent, a.k.a. Superman, how you just simply climbed this cage, and I was like, dun-dun-dun, the way you turn it on. He's like, how do you do that? And I'm thinking, Jim Brown is asking me how he turned this on? I mean, he was, in my humble opinion, the greatest running back.
Yes.
It took a few other running backs. I mean, he retired at an age where, had he gone just a couple more years, no human being would have ever broke his record.
Yeah, one of the greatest
ever. It took a few guys an additional decade just to beat his record. So I would say that's a pretty good endorsement when an NFL Hall of Famer gives you your ring name.
All right, so people can find you on dansevern.com. Facebook, The Beast 7, The Beast Dan 7. I'll put up all the links. Twitter, Dan Beast 7.
I'd like to actually end on one aspect right there. Is like, you know, you talk about that ring name, The Beast.
the beast.
Beast has a lot of negative connotations. It kind of depends on your religious upbringing and things of that nature. Anyone who really knows me knows I'm a very positive individual. Yeah. So I've kind of brought my own new acronym there for it. The word "the" stands for Dan Severn. I'm a teacher, humanitarian, and I'm an educator. My message to young people is beast, to believe in yourself, to educate yourself, to adjust your everyday attitude, to study hard, and then, in the end, to teach others. So I took a negative, and I turned to a positive. But again, Lex, you have met me today for the very first time.
Yes.
And as I said before we even started this interview, you will never meet another person like me. I do not say that lightheartedly right there. When you say Hall of Famer, legend, things of this nature, most of your viewers will never understand what I actually have accomplished in three different industries. I have over 100 state, national, international titles and or records in just the sport of amateur wrestling.
It's remarkable.
Am I missing a couple things? Sure. I'm missing an Olympic gold medal. I would have retired back in 1984 in athletics altogether. Had things gone the way they should have gone.
Also, the Olympic trials, if they didn't, the way they went is the reason you're here today.
Exactly.
Okay, well, thanks for talking today, Dan.
You're welcome, Alex.